Hello and welcome to The Ballpark, a podcast from the Phelan US Centre here at the London School of Economics. I'm Chris Gilson, Managing Editor of the Phelan US Centre's blog on US politics and policy, USAP. We're continuing our mini-series on AI in the US, which explores some of the current debates around AI and the implications for society today and in the future. In January 2025, the release of a new model and chatbot by Chinese artificial intelligence company DeepSeek sent shockwaves through the tech industry in the US and elsewhere. The new model had reportedly been created at a fraction of the cost and resources compared to those developed by US big tech companies. DeepSeek's launch was only one milestone in the ongoing AI competition between China and the US, which has seen the US try to restrict the exports of key components used in AI development to other countries, especially China. For this episode of our mini-series on AI, I spoke to Angela Zhang, Professor of Law at the Gould School of Law of the University of Southern California. Professor Zhang is an expert on AI regulation both in China and globally. We spoke about China's current approach to AI regulation and how this compares with the US, and why China may be content with being a close second in the AI race. I began our conversation by asking Professor Zhang to outline their research and current work.
My name is Angela Zhang. I am a professor from University of Southern California, Gould School of Law. My research focuses on regulation and governance, and I'm currently doing some research on the global regulation of artificial intelligence, as well as the US-China tech rivalry.
How would you characterize Beijing's current approach to AI regulation? Is it about enabling innovation, maintaining political control, or perhaps balancing both?
Great question. I think that you kind of have the answer embedded in your question. Well, I recently published a book called High Wire, How China Regulates Big Tech and Governs Its Economy. In the book, I did talk about China's approach to regulating AI, and it's kind of like a high wire approach because it needs to balance many different interests. And some of them are competing with each other. On the one hand, AI is of tremendous importance to every economy, including China. But on the other hand, as an authoritarian country, the Chinese government is also very wary of the AI technology, particularly the AI generative output that could get out of control and could be misaligned with its political values. So the government will need to, you know, on the one hand, make sure that of the political alignment of the AI technology, but on the other hand, it doesn't want to stifle innovation. It definitely wants to encourage growth through AI applications. So this is an extremely difficult balance that the government will need to strike in regulating this technology.
So what does the relationship between the Chinese state and the tech sector look like in practice around AI? Does this relationship differ significantly from that of the US and its tech firms?
Yeah, also a great question. Right? I mean, let's go back to the book that I mentioned, the High Wire book, where I delve extensively into the Chinese government's crackdown over the tech sector from late 2020 until early 2022. And there, you know, you probably recall around that time, the government did take a very interventionist, aggressive approach in regulating its tech sector. And some progressive lawyers and scholars even, you know, were saying that, look, I mean, China is doing more than us in regulating its big tech firms. But since then, the campaign has eased and regulation has returned back to normal. And we're actually seeing kind of like a honeymoon period between the firms and the government at the moment. So even though the government still has, you know, a lot of concern about AI output, but to the large extent, I mean, everything else, I think the government has taken a very light touch approach in regulating the AI sector. And in general, we see like a power imbalance between government and businesses in China, where government clearly has the upper hand. That also means that the government can relax regulation if it is in its own interest in doing that. And for a long time, the government did use this very, encouraging and very enabling approach to encourage the development of its consumer tech businesses. So the spike of what happened during the crackdown for a brief period of 18 months, a few years ago, I see the government has been very supportive of technological development in China. Now, I would see the United States also taking quite a similar approach like China, but however, its tech firms are way more powerful vis-a-vis the government, right? If you see the government has the upper hand in China, I will see the tech firm seems to have an upper hand in the United States. So in terms of the power imbalance, the United States is actually at another polar extreme where I would situate EU as in the middle, where businesses can still challenge government intervention, but at the same time, the EU institutions have been very aggressive in reining in big tech as well.
Would you say that the US has anything to learn from China in terms of how it regulates these big tech companies working on AI?
Well, I mean, China has definitely a much more coordinated approach in regulating its AI industry, right? I mean, unlike the United States, which has a very decentralized network of regulation, you have the federal government, you have the state government, and above all, you have the plaintiff's bar. In fact, almost all the litigations in the United States towards the AI sector were driven by those class law action lawsuits filed by the private plaintiffs, right? I mean, so, and because of this decentralized network, it's much harder for the United States to adopt a very coherent approach to regulating AI. And that's why, you know, Donald Trump introduced this big and beautiful bill in which it attempt to block the efforts for states to preemptively adopt AI regulation. And in fact, several states have, many states have been in the process of doing that. And some states have already, started regulating, right? Whereas in China, because a very centralized model of governance politically, the government have way more leverage in coordinating AI policies and can directly embed industrial policies into its legal instrument. And we saw that very clearly with the interim measures to regulate generative AI. And in that overarching legal framework to regulate generative AI technology, the government include very explicit industrial policy language in the document, supporting a very tolerant and cautious stance in regulating the technology, trying to encourage different stakeholders to forge ahead with the development of the technology, and trying to coordinate various institutional actors to further facilitate AI development. And this kind of legal provisions are very rare in the documents in the US or in the EU, right? I mean, but I think that China can take this kind of like whole of society approach in trying to forge ahead with AI development.
You've already mentioned your 2024 book, High Wire, How China Regulates Big Tech and Governs Its Economy. So in that book, you introduce a dynamic pyramid model to explain China's regulatory governance. Can you just briefly talk us through this model and how it helps us to make sense of China's approach to regulating emerging technologies like AI?
Right. I mean, because the laws changes all the time, so I think it's helpful to come up with like analytical framework to think about China's regulation and governance. Now, this model is actually inspired by systems theory, which sees our world as a very complex and interconnected system. So we don't look at the law itself. We look at, you know, what are the institutional actors that are driving the law, adoption and enforcement, and how that will affect its outcome. And specifically, the models have three major elements. One is the structure, then it is the process, and lastly, it's the outcome. Now, in the China's context, I see the structure of China's regulatory system is very hierarchical. So I use hierarchy to describe the structure because it involves players from different tiers of the regulatory system. And then in terms of the policy process, I use volatility to describe it because you can, as you can see in China, there's often very dramatic policy pendulum swing, right? I mean, it's often characterized by cycles of regulatory tightening and then regulatory easing. And then in terms of outcome, I use fragility to describe it. And by fragility, I mean oftentimes, I think the Chinese government's regulatory measures were motivated by good intentions, but they often generate vast unintended consequences that undermine the original goal of intervention. In the context of AI so far, because this is such a disruptive and a new technology, so far, because the government has been extremely supportive, I'm talking about the top leadership at the apex of the regulatory hierarchy, because they are extremely supportive of its development. As you may recall, earlier this year, President Xi Jinping held a tech symposium with the leading tech entrepreneurs in China, including the founder of DeepSeek and Huawei's boss and many others, right? I mean, that shows a very, send a very strong policy signal that the government is very supportive of this sector. So the regulators who are subordinate to the top leadership and are very sensitive to the policy wings, they will take a very lax stance in regulating this sector, right? I mean, this is exactly what we observe in practice, right? I mean, despite of the fact that China seems very aggressive and very proactive in churning out a lot of AI-related laws, and in some instances, China seems to even step ahead of the EU or the United States in regulating AI technology, but you can't just take the law for granted. You also need to see how they have been implemented and enforced. And in practice, enforcement has been very light touch, right? I mean, unlike in the United States or Europe, where you hear the news, the AI firm have constantly been investigated, sued, and challenged. In China, you have heard none of those news involving the leading AI tech firms, right? I mean, so you can see the hierarchical model of China's regulatory governance is shaping its actual enforcement of the outcome. But that said, I mean, let's bear in mind the volatility aspect of this model, right? I mean, if there is a crisis that looms that could threaten the social stability or political stability of the Chinese society, the regulatory pendulum will swing to the other extreme. And in the Chinese context, because of the information deficit in the regulatory system, because of the authoritarian system, the information don't travel very, very efficiently, right? I mean, so the top policymakers may not understand the warring situation until things really got out of hand. And that also have the tendency of creating more dramatic regulatory pendulum swing. So that volatility is something that we need to bear in mind, even if at this moment, so far the government has been very supportive, but that attitude could change quite dramatically and very quickly. And lastly is the fragility outcome. Is that so far, the technology hasn't seemed to create any very obvious downsides to the Chinese society. Maybe we don't know. But what I'm concerned about is that because of the information lag in the regulatory system and because of, a lot of the unintended consequences don't tend to be observed until much later down the road. And so by the time the government starts to regulate, it may have already been too late. And this is a repeated, recurring theme we have observed in previous Chinese policy interventions.
Chinese AI model DeepSeek made headlines in early 2025, sparking concern in the US and elsewhere about China's AI capabilities. Since then, how have US-China tech relations evolved? Are those earlier concerns still valid, or were they largely shaped by sort of Cold War style rhetoric at the time?
Well, I think the United States have taken kind of like a Cold War rhetoric towards China's tech since the first Trump administration back in 2020 you know, starting from the outbreak of the trade war in 2018, from, you know, the crackdown on Huawei, ZTE, we started all these sanctions and restrictions on Chinese tech firms. And numerous of them have been added to the entity list, which restrict their access to advanced U.S. technology. Now, the emergence of DeepSeek, from what I have seen, will just further exacerbate this trend because DeepSeek is directly challenging the dominance of the U.S. AI companies, including both the software and the hardware companies. Right, I mean, because before DeepSeek, the leading U.S. AI labs kind of have a monopoly over the most powerful large language models. And now because DeepSeek spent a tiny fraction of the money and was able to achieve a comparable capability at, you know, almost 99% of the capability of the frontier AI models, it kind of democratize AI access, right? Because it also open source it and make it very easy for everybody else to access very advanced AI models. And that directly challenge the positions of the leading AI labs like OpenAI and Anthropic, which have poured billions of dollars in training the AI models. For sure, they still need to continue to train because people were talking about DeepSeek was using the distillation technique to copy the large language models, and that's how they can train it so quickly. But at the end of the day, you know, somebody still need to train the big language models, so companies can use the distillation technique to copy that model, right? I mean, so that casts doubt on the sustainability of the AI training business in the first place. Who want to invest in so much money in training AI model when other people can copy it and use distillation techniques to extract the models at almost minimal cost, right? I mean, so that's the first challenge a DeepSeek pose. And the second is that because DeepSeek open source its model, there is less a need for other countries and other firms to spend tons of resources and money in training the AI models, right? I mean, so that was why when DeepSeek emerged, NVIDIA stock suffered a hit because the industry was growing skeptical that whether we still need so many AI chips because of the scaling law. And also because of DeepSeek, there are less resources invested on training, but way more resources will be spent on inferencing, while inferencing require computing resources that are not necessarily as advanced as those for training. That also challenged NVIDIA's position because DeepSeek and other Chinese AI firms can turn to domestic hardware manufacturers like Huawei for the chip supplies for inferencing tasks because that require lower AI chips. Because otherwise the training require more advanced AI chips, right? So that in a way also help Chinese AI hardware companies to expand their market share and market influence. And because of that, right? I mean, you can tell, you know, the US, both the hardware and software companies, they faced quite serious challenge from DeepSeek. And that was one of the reasons why the US decided to double down on the chip ban, right? I mean, and the chip ban has now escalated to not just a ban for DeepSeek or for Chinese AI firms like DeepSeek to access the most advanced NVIDIA chips. They also want to ban their access to those chips that's specifically designed for the Chinese market for inferencing tasks, such as NVIDIA's H20, which is designed not optimally for training, but for deployment, right? I mean, and what's more, you know, when the Trump administration rescinded the AI diffusion rules that was introduced by the Biden administration last year, the Trump administration, the BIS of the Commerce Department, even introduced guidance restricting companies' access to certain Huawei's Ascend chips, which are good for inferencing and training tasks, right? I mean, and that basically forced every company in the world, including Chinese companies like DeepSeek and Alibaba, to choose between using NVIDIA chips or, you know, Huawei chips, right? I mean, so you can see the U.S. export control and tech restriction just further escalated after DeepSeek's challenge.
Kind of following on from that, with Huawei and others developing domestic chips in China, are we seeing a shift away from U.S. dominance in AI hardware? And how significant is this trend towards decentralizing AI infrastructure?
I do think that's a very significant trend, and we will experience soon another DeepSeek moment with China's hardware development. So probably another Huawei moment at some point, right? I mean, Huawei, and by the way, there is another company called Xiaomi in China. They have made significant inroads in designing AI chips, and Xiaomi recently, I think there was a report that they were able to design 3-nanometer chips, and Huawei has been incredibly good in creating substitutes for AI chips. Even though, and then they can build it in clusters. So that performance of Huawei's clusters chips can rival a very advanced chips from NVIDIA, even though they do consume more energy and electricity. In other words, I think Huawei is achieving quite close capability with the most advanced US chips, although they are definitely not there yet, but they're good enough for use by China's AI industry. And what's more, because of the US double down on Chinese firms' access to US chips, they are effectively giving the market shares to Huawei to fill in those demand. So the US tax restriction, in my opinion, is actually helping Chinese firms rather than particularly Huawei by giving them more market shares and strategically aligned the incentive of the private sector with the state's goal of self-sufficiency. Because the private sectors, like companies like DeepSeek, Alibaba, ByteDance, they can't access the most advanced chip. They have to use Huawei's chips, right? I mean, so it's not like they're particularly patriotic or something. But because of the U.S. restrictions, Huawei are actually doing it phenomenally well with its chip improvement. And I just see that it will be just a matter of time before Huawei can really catch up.
Do you think the global rise of China's AI sector is fueling competition and tension amongst the major players? Is there still room for meaningful multilateral governance on AI?
There is definitely room for multilateral governance of AI when the incentives of the nations are aligned. So even though the United States see China as a geopolitical foe, but if AI does pose existential risk to mankind, I think both countries will have strong incentive to coordinate because they are the most powerful players in this industry. So I am, in that respect, I am not too pessimistic. What I'm most worried about, however, is that we don't really know much about the AI technology because it's still at the early stage. And then leading computer scientists still have quite fierce debates regarding the potentials of this technology, whether it will really get out of hand, whether it will really pose existential threat to our society, right? I mean, so we can't even have a consensus about the X risk of AI yet, not to mention how we should regulate AI or how we should coordinate the regulation of AI. And that's why you are seeing both the US and China don't show too much interest in regulating this technology because they don't see a serious threat coming. And also because of this reason, they show very little interest in cooperating because they don't see the need in doing that. And instead, all the tensions and focus has been on racing towards AGI with the hope that will help the country to obtain decisive military, economic, and geopolitical advantage.
So the US has introduced a range of legal tools to curb China's technological rise, including export bans, investment screening, and most recently, the AI diffusion framework. Could you explain what the AI diffusion framework is for our listeners and how it fits into the broader US strategy?
Well, the AI diffusion framework actually has been rescinded by the Trump administration. And instead, as we discussed, the BIS actually replaced it with some guidance on tightening restriction of using Huawei chips and Chinese AI models. But to go back to what the Biden administration did with the AI diffusion framework, that was introduced towards the very end of the Biden administration, which restrict AI chip exports to different tiers of the countries, particularly those in the second and third tiers. The second tier countries also include countries like Malaysia, UAE, Saudi Arabia, Singapore. And the whole purpose is to try to close the loopholes and to prevent these countries from becoming like an arbitrage opportunities for Chinese firms trying to still access advanced US AI technologies. And obviously that AI diffusion framework caused quite a lot of controversy in the industry because now you are not only restricting US firms' access to Chinese market, you're also restricting access to AI markets in other countries, right? I mean, you're sort of further undercutting their profits and revenues. And that's explained why, you know, there was such a backlash and eventually caused the Trump administration to reverse this AI diffusion rules. Again, this echoed the trend that we talked about earlier of, you know, the ratcheting effects of the U.S. tech containment towards China that is very often the trend just intensify and there's very little recalibration of, you know, losing up some of the restrictions.
In a recent piece for the Financial Times, you suggest that China may be content with being a close second in the AI race. Is the global conversation around winning the AI race overly focused on frontier models?
I think so. And that's particularly the public discourse on AI race in the United States. It seems to be single-handedly focused on achieving AGI and winning the AI race against China. Whereas I don't think China has a very strong incentive to win the AGI race. And that goes back to what I said earlier, that actually China will benefit more by staying as a close second, because rather than pouring, you know, billions of dollars of resources in training the frontier AI models, China can just spend a tiny fraction of the cost to steal the most advanced models, right? I mean, so why would you bother spending so many resources in the first place, right? And by the way, that is also not China's competitive strength. China's major competitive strength is its manufacturing ecosystem and its massive diffusion capability. China will probably continue to do what it has been good at, which is to cut costs, to make streamline the production, to apply AI technology widely to the society, so to diffuse this technology at a rapid scale. And then during this process, it will be able to significantly improve productivity and really upgrade this industry. And that's what I think is China wants to achieve. At the end of the day, right? I mean, getting to AGI doesn't mean anything if that doesn't translate into improved productivity, you know, economic growth and then society improvement, right? I mean, so I think the Chinese have been much more pragmatic in its AI development. And I see its strategy is actually, it might turn out to be the best. By being a close second, it might turn out to be the best and suit China's strategic needs.
A Rest of the World article stated that many Chinese engineers now prefer to return home after interning for or working on US-based AI projects rather than staying in the US. In your view, is talent retention the key to success in software development?
Oh, yeah, Totally, right? I mean, so people used to say data is like the key to AI competition. And then later on, they said, oh, it's chips that is the most important for AI development. But as what DeepSeek has shown, it's neither of them. It is the talents, right? Why didn't any other AI firm came up with all these smart algorithmic strategies that DeepSeek have come up with? It's mostly because of the talents DeepSeek was able to attract. And they have a very interesting hiring strategy of hiring local talents who are like this incredibly smart genius who have won these mathematics or science competition. So they got really the best talents and put them together and give them a very relaxed and environment to innovate and develop the technology. I think that's really the secret sauce of DeepSeek's success. And because of the current political environment in the United States and the growing hostility towards the Chinese scientists, ethnic Chinese scientists, I will see there will be more and more computer scientists in the States coming back to China, right? But as Jensen Huang once said, commented recently, like 50% of the AI scientists in the world are Chinese, right? I mean, and most of those working in the AI industry in the United States, in the Silicon Valley, they are Chinese too, right? I mean, so if the US lose these talent war, then I think it will suffer a huge setback and in its AI sector.
I think a lot of people listening to this will feel like AI developments are happening so fast in the US and in China. What can we expect in terms of AI development and policy direction from both China and the US in the near future? And by the near future, I mean the next 6 months to a year or so.
Well, I would definitely expect continual relaxation of the AI regulation. You can say this is kind of like a race to the bottom because at the end of the day, you know, this technology is so powerful and has such wide application that these governments should exert more efforts in understanding and starting to prepare themselves for the worst case scenario. But this is not the priority of either government at the moment. Until there will be a, you know, a big crisis, a catastrophe that happened, I just don't think that either the US or China will take an aggressive stance to regulate this technology.
And just before we finish, I'd just like to give you the opportunity to direct our listeners' attention to any new work you've got coming up, papers, books, or anything else you think our audience should be looking at.
Thanks. So I'm currently working on a long paper on the US-China tech rivalry, and which might become my third book because all my previous work focus on Chinese law and regulation, particularly in the tech sector. And this third book will focus on more on the US law and how US regulates Chinese tech. And if you think about it, the United States is not interested in regulating technology in general. And the only tech regulation it has produced so far are all targeted at Chinese firms. To the extent when we talk about US tech restriction, it's mostly about the tech war.
That's great. Well, our listeners should definitely look out for that in the near future. Just remains me to say, Professor Angela Zhang, thank you so much for speaking to the Ballpark today.
My pleasure.
Angela Zhang is Professor of Law at the Gould School of Law of the University of Southern California. And that's it for this episode of The Ballpark. Thanks so much to Angela Zhang for joining us in this episode. For more information about the Phelan US Center, you can go to www.lse.ac.uk/united-states. On X and Instagram, we're at @LSE_US, and on LinkedIn, we're at @LSE_United_States. This episode of The Ballpark was produced by Chris Gilson and Luke Digweed. Our theme tune is by Ranger and the Rearrangers, a Seattle-based gypsy jazz band. You can look them up at rangerswings.com. To listen to all our previous episodes, just enter LSE Ballpark into your search engine of choice. You'll find us. We're free to listen to, and unlike lots of other podcasts, we're ad-free. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. Email us any feedback at uscenter@lse.ac.uk, or you can send us a tweet at @LSE_US. And tell your friends about us. If you like what you've heard, then please rate and review us via your podcast platform. It helps other people find the show. The content and opinions expressed in this podcast do not reflect those of the Phelan US Center or the London School of Economics. Thanks for listening.